cities are us, so to speak. Cities are the origin, if you like, of almost all of our so-called problems, our big challenges from the environment, global warming, questions of finance, disease, energy, resources. All of these things are all generated in cities. On the other hand, the solutions to the problems are also generated in cities, because that's where the smart people are. That's where ideas, innovation, and wealth are generated. So there's an urgency to having a theory of cities.
Jeffrey West has taken on that task. He's bringing his theoretical physicist's mind to the questions of urbanization. He told Steve Paulson that he's trying to discover the
quantitative, predictive, analytic theory of cities. And the question is that possible? Or maybe that isn't possible at all, and we'll just have to stick with the traditional, more qualitative, narrative ways in which people have thought about cities.
So you actually want to come up with laws, general laws that apply to all cities.
So that's the question. Are there any generic, kind of universal, in quotes, laws that govern the growth, organization, and evolution of cities? So the work that I got involved with was just looking at data, various metrics that characterize cities, like the length of all its roads, the length of its electrical lines, the number of AIDS cases per year, the amount of violent crime, anything you could think of where you could get data. If you looked at that as a function of city size, is it kind of all over the place, expressing that every city is really unique, which is the way it feels, or is there some regularity saying that even though it feels unique, it's actually behaving in a highly constrained, almost predictive way? And one of the things we discovered was that there was this extraordinary regularity. You tell me the size of a city in the United States, I could tell you with, you know, 85% certainty how many police it has, the length of its roads, how many AIDS cases it, quote, should have.
Now, as we look at cities around the world, it seems like they're getting bigger and bigger and bigger. From a physicist's perspective, is there an inherent reason why cities should get bigger? Is there some advantage to that?
Yeah. So in biology, the scaling laws are such that, for example, what you might have expected is that if you had one mammal twice the size of another, it would require twice as much energy. That's not the case at all. These scaling laws say, roughly speaking, that if one is twice the size of the other, it actually only requires about 75%. So there's this extraordinary economy of scale. If you go to cities, you find there is a similarity to that in terms of infrastructure. The bigger the city, the less infrastructure it needs per capita in a systematic way.
You don't
need twice the number of roads. You don't need twice the number of gas stations, twice the amount of electrical lines, and so on. The law there is roughly that it's about 15% saving.
Certainly one of the most influential thinkers about cities over the past century was Jane Jacobs. And one of her ideas was that the city works like an organism. Yep. Do you think she's basically right?
So I came with the view that it was just like an organism, which turned out to be wrong. And so to some extent, a city is an organism. Metaphorically, certainly, that are like organisms. It grows, it adapts, it evolves. However, in the very thing that is a city and the very thing that Jane Jacobs emphasized, the city is people. And it turns out the people side of the equation is not like organisms. A new dynamic was introduced to the planet when people started talking to one another and working together, discovering economies of scale, but then, more importantly, being innovative. If you ask about these metrics that are associated with the social networks, like the amount of wages you get, the number of AIDS cases, the number of patents produced, these kinds of things which are socioeconomic and involve the interaction between human beings, if you ask about those, you see a phenomenon that if you double the size, instead of getting less of something, you get more. So if you double the size of a city, you get about 15% per capita increase of the wages, the average wealth, the number of AIDS cases, the number of patents produced, the number of police, the amount of crime, and so on, all coming together, scaling in the same way across the globe. And that leads to this extraordinary open-ended growth, which is the thing that we love, but also may be taking us over the edge of a cliff. It also is the origin of our speeding up of the pace of our lives. Our life gets faster, so that living in a bigger city, you have to innovate faster and faster to keep up with things in a systematic way.
There's also a very interesting question, which is, given that we have a global population that is booming, and there are real questions about whether the Earth can sustain this population, is high-density living basically the key to future human success?
If we insist on open-ended growth, then putting people in bigger and bigger cities is a continuous way of saving.
Well, there's also just the question of, can a city be too big to be livable? So, I mean, do you really want to live in a city of 30 million people?
Well, that's a very good question. The evidence that people are continually attracted to cities because of this extraordinary increase in their well-being, despite the fact that they may even have to live for these periods in slums and favelas, nevertheless, is a continuous attraction of cities. And I think there is this kind of image always that you can do much better in cities. And that's true. That is the truth.
You can do better economically.
You can do better economically. And that seems to be the driving force. People always want more. You know, and if that is the principle, then it follows that these cities will continue to grow.
Is that to say that cities could just keep expanding? You could have 100 million inhabitants in a city?
In one way, the answer is yes. On the other, what is a city? So in this framework, roughly speaking, it is everybody that's somehow connected to the network. So the question is, could this network grow to encompass 100 million people? That may be unlikely because take Los Angeles. We already have maybe 15 million people, but it already has, 12-lane freeways.
There are only so many lanes you can add
then
to
the
a freeway.
Exactly. So that brings the question, if you have 100 million people and you want them all to be part of this network, and we still have the same transportation system, we're going to have 25-lane freeways, to make it absurd, maybe. That is clearly impossible. So it could be that there's a stopping of cities or that they bifurcate.
Mm-hmm. So here you are, the physicist who studies cities.
Yes.
You're gathering all kinds of data. You're coming up with general laws as to how cities work. Are there policy implications here? I mean, should urban planners be listening to what you're coming up with?
Yes, very good question, and a question we ponder quite a bit. So here's my kind of little cartoon version. To build an aeroplane, you don't have to know any science, but you have to have very good intuition, and you have to be a very good tinkerer. That's what the Wright brothers were, in a sense. But you try building a Boeing 747, not knowing hydrodynamics, aerodynamics, and materials, and so on. So you can't scale unless you understand. And scale is critical for the resilience, growth, and evolution of cities. So I would say, to be quite provocative about it, I think we are dealing with cities much as if we're Wright brothers. What it desperately needs is to develop that science, to have the underlying theories, bring them together with the traditional, more qualitative, narrative way of thinking about them. It can't be done piecemeal and locally. Overall, you need to think systemically and to understand what the underlying laws are and what it is that's driving them. And what is driving them is the social networks, the interaction of people. And a successful city has somehow been able to facilitate the multiple interactions that give rise to the buzz, the excitement, facilitating the creativity of a city.
So how do you do that? I mean, does that just happen, or can you actually plan for that?
Well, I think you can understand some of that. So one of the things that we did was we looked at the scaling laws. So the scaling laws say, give me the size of the city. It says you should have, this many police, you should be producing this many patents, you should have this much crime, this many AIDS cases, okay, et cetera, et cetera. So, of course, when you look at each individual city, you see that it violates each one of these. It either over or underperforms relative to, quote, what it should be doing. So what we did is we took data from the 366 metropolitan statistical areas of the United States. Are they over or underperforming? And asking, what is it that you're doing in that city that has led to you either being lousy, you're hardly producing any patterns relative to what you should, or you're having more crime than you should, or you're overperforming. And one of the most interesting things about these kinds of data was that if a city was overperforming in, say, 1960, 1970, roughly speaking, it's over or underperforming to the same degree now. It tells you something very important for planners, that it's very hard to change things.
If there's one question out there you wish you could answer regarding cities, you as the physicist, you know, yes, trying to figure out how cities work, you know, what makes the best, the most livable city, what would that one question be?
Well, the question that I that drives this for me is actually, is any of this sustainable? Cities are the manifestation of who we are, the best of human achievement in many ways, and some of its worst aspects. They continue to grow and dominate the planet. But what is clear to me is that we cannot do it with the kind of open-ended exponential growth that we have, because I think any physicist knows that you cannot sustain exponential growth ad infinitum. Is there a maximum size for cities? Can they just kind of go on? Could you imagine a city of 100 million people? Well, the biggest city at the moment is Tokyo with 35 million, and there are many now so-called mega cities. Tokyo is somewhat unique that it's clearly a highly functioning, well-run city. Many of those other mega cities, especially in Africa and India, are kind of borderline because of these pressures. And I remind you of the statistic I said at the beginning, 1.5 million people a week. You realize what that is? That means that every 2 months, the equivalent to New York metropolitan area, not just New York City, New York metropolitan area is being added effectively to the planet. So between now and, I don't know, the beginning of December, there's another New York metropolitan area. By the beginning of February, another one, and so on for the next 25, 30 years. That's mind-blowing, actually. This makes me, I must say, quite cynical about our ability to cope with that. I mean, the stress on infrastructure, the stress on resources, energy, things like, you know, water, and so forth. And in the end, the stresses on the social fabric may actually be too much, that we simply can't sustain it.
Jeffrey West is a theoretical physicist with the Santa Fe Institute. You can hear the extended version of Steve's conversation with him on our website at ttbook.org. And if you want to share urbane quotes from West with your friends, it's easy. Just follow us on Twitter. I'm Jim Fleming. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from Wisconsin Public Radio and PRI, Public Radio International.